I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, push for peace. U.S. officials are in Saudi Arabia to work out details of a ceasefire between Russia and Ukraine. We have the latest. Back at home, Pope Francis greets the faithful as he is released from a Rome hospital after more than a month of treatment. Feeling the heat. Multiple wildfires caused mass evacuations and emergencies across the country, as well as in Japan. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Catherine of Sweden. Our top story tonight, President Donald Trump holds a cabinet meeting that wasn't originally on his public schedule. Among those in attendance, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, discussing the war in Ukraine. And he said today that there is no military solution to this war, adding that it has to end through negotiation. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
Tracy, today's cabinet meeting touched on several different topics, including the war in Ukraine, which President Donald Trump has been trying to bring to a conclusion. And today, his Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, was sitting right next to him.
Lubin, 2,500 young people, and these are Russian and Ukrainian people largely. And they're not American people, but on a human basis, we want to get it stopped.
Over the weekend, more fighting, several deadly Russian bombings across Ukraine, and an apartment building in Russia hit by a Ukrainian drone. Meanwhile, in Saudi Arabia, behind closed doors at a luxury hotel, U.S. and Russian officials open a new round of negotiations for a partial ceasefire. And in the cabinet room at the White House, U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio tells the president,
we have teams on the ground in Saudi Arabia meeting with the respective sides in the hopes of making progress towards this outcome that we all want to see.
One major sticking point is what targets would be off limits, including energy infrastructure. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff says President Trump's conversations with Russia and Ukraine are focused on bringing a lasting peace. And he told Fox News they're discussing a Black Sea ceasefire on ships between both countries. And from that, you'll naturally gravitate into a full-on shooting ceasefire. Witkoff also spoke to Tucker Carlson about his face-to-face meetings with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
What did you think of him?
I liked him.
Yep.
I thought he was straight up with me. Of course, by the way, I've said that. And you can imagine, by the way, I say that, I get pilloried. I don't regard Putin as a bad guy. That is a complicated situation, that war.
Witkoff says communication with Putin is necessary to negotiate an end to the war, and that President Trump's agenda is stop the killing, stop the carnage. But former State Department spokesman Matthew Miller criticized Witkoff, writing, Witkoff doesn't know the names of all the Ukrainian provinces occupied by Russia, but somehow knows the people there want to join Russia. Vice President J.D. Vance tweeted, Steve Witkoff is a great guy doing an incredible job. The people sniping at him are mad that he is succeeding where they failed for 40 years.
Also at the cabinet meeting today, Secretary of State Marco Rubio said President Trump is the only leader in the world who could have brought both Ukraine and Russia together to the table to try to bring an end to the conflict. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
And joining us now with more is Ambassador John Herbst, Senior Director at the Atlantic Council and former Ambassador to Ukraine and Uzbekistan. Mr. Ambassador, thank you for being with us today. So what do you think will actually come from these talks in Saudi Arabia, and are you optimistic?
I think it's pretty clear. Putin does not want to end the war on the ground, or for that matter, to accept any more than a few limitations to war in the air. His aim remains to take effective control of Ukraine. That means he needs to take the capital, Kyiv. He needs to take Odessa in the south to make Ukraine landlocked. He needs to take Kharkiv, the second largest city in Ukraine, very close to the Russian border, Zaporizhia, Kherson, Dnipro. He has no interest, which is why when Zelensky accepted the Trump proposal for general ceasefire, Putin said no, albeit in a polite way designed not to annoy President Trump.
Yeah, we're told an advisor to the Ukrainian president told the media that talks like these could take months to hammer out a deal. Do you think it's possible that potentially a deal could be reached sooner than that? And what kind of time frame do you think we're looking at if it actually happens?
Well, the Trump team saying they hope to get it done in a month from now, but then President Trump himself said, well, maybe that's a soft target. Maybe it'll take longer. Look, Ukraine is willing to make a deal which involves serious compromise. The Kremlin is not. For some reason, President Trump believes that coddling the aggressor, coddling Putin, is the way to get Russia to make a deal. That flies in the face of decades of American negotiations with the Kremlin. If the Trump team wants a deal quickly, a durable peace, so that Putin stops his aggression in Ukraine, at least stops it where it is right now, he's going to have to put serious pressure on the Kremlin. To its credit, the administration took a step, 8 or 10 days ago, where they removed the waiver in the sanctions, the final sanctions policy initiated by the Biden team when they went after Russian sales of oil and gas. That was a good step. But they also need to make clear to Putin that they're going to continue to arm Ukraine so he cannot make further gains on the battlefield. Trump does not want to send these as gifts, so he doesn't have to. Let Ukraine barter that with its minerals. Let Europe pay for it. Let Ukraine pay for it. But if we announce tomorrow a major weapons package for Ukraine, that would tell Putin that maybe his efforts to conquer Ukraine fully will fail.
Almost out of time here, but you knew this region very well. Do you think that peace is possible here?
It's possible if we give Ukraine the ability to stop Russian aggression. Because Putin, unless he will be stopped by force, will continue this war in Ukraine. It's really that simple. Now, Putin is not going to do that on his own. So if the United States, if President Trump wants to make us a great international power again, he would do exactly what I've said.
All right, we're going to leave right there. Thank you so much, Mr. Ambassador, for weighing in. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
Our top officials in the Trump administration, including Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, appear to have texted plans for an upcoming bombing overseas to a group that included a journalist. Jeffrey Goldberg, editor-in-chief of The Atlantic magazine, says that he was included in a group chat about military strikes in Yemen. Those strikes happened on March 15th, and Goldberg says that he learned about them 2 hours before they happened. A spokesperson for the National Security Council says the messages in the group chat on Signal, an encrypted messaging app, appear to be authentic. A reporter asked President Trump about it this afternoon.
I don't know anything about it. I'm not a big fan of The Atlantic. To me, it's a magazine that's going out of business. I think it's not much of a magazine, but I know nothing about it. You're saying that they had what?
They were using Signal to coordinate on sensitive materials. And
having to do with what? Having to do with what? What were they talking about?
With the Houthis.
The Houthis? You mean the attack on the Houthis? Right. Well, it couldn't have been very effective because the attack was very effective. I can tell you that. I don't know anything about it. You're telling me about it for the first time.
An investigation to how that number was added to the chain is now underway. Well, today, a D.C. Court of Appeals heard arguments over the president's use of wartime powers to speed up deportations of immigrants. The case centers around a decision by Judge James Boasberg to issue a temporary restraining order blocking the use of the 1798 Alien Enemies Act. The judge wanted to determine whether the administration was warranted in invoking wartime authority to deport alleged Venezuelan gang members to El Salvador without due process. And for more on this, let's bring in former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson. He was also the first undersecretary of the Department of Homeland Security when it was created back in 2003. Governor, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. So if you would talk to us more about the Alien Enemies Act, which this case is centered on, and when was the last time it was actually invoked?
Well, the Alien Enemies Act only has been invoked three times in our history, one in the War of 1812, World War One, and World War Two. And if you remember, as history shows us, that in World War Two, they rounded up the Japanese citizens or visitors here, put them in internment camps, and a few years later, they determined that that was wrong, and they actually gave them compensation. Those were internment camps here in the United States of America. Here you have roundup of Venezuelans that are going to El Salvador. There's two requirements in the Alien Enemies Act. One, that there is a foreign country involved. Secondly, that there is an invasion or an incursion, military-type incursion into the United States. That allows the president to invoke it. He's done it this time, arguing that the cartels is the foreign government that's operated by Venezuela. It is a tenuous argument. Obviously, the district court judge had issues with that. I expect this to ultimately wind up in the United States Supreme Court.
Borders are, Tom Holman says that everyone that was sent down to El Salvador was a member of that gang, that TDA gang, that was labeled a terrorist organization by the Trump administration. However, I understand a number of family members of those that were deported, Mr. Governor, saying that now they're disputing that, that these people weren't part of a gang. That said, what happens next? Do you think this will be looked into?
Well, I think it will be looked into. Obviously, the courts are very concerned about it because the court looks at individuals and whether they belong to the gang, whether they posed a risk, and whether they're rightfully detained. The administration is trying to look at this in broad terms. We want to round up all the gang members, and they're not worried about individualized process and due process. And so that's the conflict right here. Obviously, they're trying to solve a serious problem to our country. Gang violence, those from that are undocumented coming here, creating havoc in our streets. But you've got to have, under our American system, some level of due process to make sure you do not round up the innocent with those that actually would be subject to that deportation effort. That is a conflict. That's something the courts are going to have to delve into, and they're not too excited about just accepting the border czar's argument. Well, they're all gang members. They actually want to have some level of proof and justification for that kind of detention and deportation.
Almost out of time here, sir. But how do you think this all shakes out? What are we looking at?
I think it'll go to the United States Supreme Court. I think it's a close call. I think, one, you affirm and say the Alien Enemies Act is constitutional. They have said it's constitutional before. That could be revisited. Secondly, the debate will be about the power of the President of the United States and whether the judiciary is going to rethink the power of the president in terms of invoking this act. Very serious issue, a lot at stake here, power of the presidency and due process of individuals.
Governor Hutchinson, thank you so much, sir, for your insights. We appreciate it. Well, a planned visit to Greenland by U.S. officials is being called, quote, highly aggressive. Vice President Vance's wife, Usha, is going to the island to watch a dog sled race and learn more about Greenland's culture. A U.S. National Security Advisor, Mike Waltz, is also expected to visit the Danish territory this week. In an interview with a local newspaper, Greenland's prime minister lashed out against the planned visits. He said, quote, what is the National Security Advisor doing in Greenland? The only purpose is to demonstrate power over us. His mere presence in Greenland will no doubt fuel American belief in Trump's mission, and the pressure will increase. In Turkey, hundreds of thousands have taken to the streets in protest after the arrest of Istanbul's mayor. Last night marked the fifth night of protests across the country. In Istanbul, protesters were confronted by police with pepper spray. They are protesting the arrest of Istanbul's mayor, a chief political rival of President Erdogan. The mayor was accused of belonging to a criminal group. Protesters say the accusations are politically motivated. More violence in the Middle East as Israel hits a hospital in an airstrike in southern Gaza. Israel confirmed the attack, saying it targeted a key terrorist with Hamas. The target was not identified. Employees in the hospital are lashing out against Israel and the rest of the world.
22 Arab countries are watching. European countries that call for peace and call for humanity and women's rights and children's rights. Here are the martyrs sleeping on the beds, patients exposed to this barbaric bombing as a result of a brutal aggression.
On Saturday, Israel also launched airstrikes against Lebanon, killing at least 7 people. Israel said they were targeting members of Hezbollah in response to rockets fired into Israel earlier in the day. 5 weeks after being hospitalized, the Holy Father has finally been discharged from the Gemelli Hospital and is back at his residence in the Vatican. While the Pope needs to continue rehabilitation therapy, all doctors agree that the best way to recover is to do so at home. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sittigan has more.
After 38 days, Pope Francis has been discharged from the Gemelli Hospital in Rome. Before returning to the Vatican, the Pope appeared for the first time since his hospitalization from the balcony of the hospital. Pope Francis greeted those present and gave his thumbs up to the nearly 3,000 cheering people gathered in the square below. He noticed an Italian lady who has reportedly come to the Gemelli Hospital every morning and to St. Peter's Square every evening to pray for the Pope's health, holding a bouquet of yellow flowers.
Thanks, everyone. I see this woman with the yellow flowers. She's a good woman.
After imparting his blessing, the Pope was released from the hospital. On his way back to the Vatican, he stopped at St. Mary Major, where he gave flowers to Cardinal Rolandas Macricas, coadjutor archpriest of the Papal Basilica, to be placed before the icon of Mary Salus Populi Romani, as a sign of his gratitude for her care and protection. The news of the Pope's discharge was announced the previous day by Dr. Sergio Alfieri, head of the Gemelli Hospital medical team that has been treating the Pope, at a last-minute press conference.
The good news that the whole world is waiting for is that tomorrow the Holy Father will be discharged. He will return to Santa Marta.
The Pope will now begin a two-month period of rest during which he will continue to receive drug and respiratory therapy. Dr. Alfieri noted that while the past week has seen significant improvements and the bilateral pneumonia has been successfully treated, time is needed for a complete recovery.
The prescription is to continue the pharmaceutical therapies partially, which he will need to take orally for a long time, and, very importantly, the recommendation for a period of rest in convalescence for at least 2 months.
The medical team explained that the Pope's lungs and respiratory muscles have been damaged, so it will take time for his voice to return to normal. The doctors also clarified that the serious infections are gone, but that some bacteria remain, and advised against him receiving visitors or meeting large groups of people. When journalists asked about the Pope's participation in the liturgies of Holy Week, the head of the Holy See Press Office explained that this will be determined based on the improvements shown during this period of recovery. In Rome, Benedictia de Grean, EWTN News Nightly.
I have a lot more so to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including a boost for babies. Pro-life lawmakers are making a push on Capitol Hill. And tributes are pouring in following the death of a pro-life lawmaker from Utah. Emergency crews are battling wildfires in at least three states. North Carolina ordered a mandatory evacuation from a county still recovering from Hurricane Helene. Meanwhile, South Carolina's governor declared a state of emergency in response to a growing blaze. Hundreds of miles to the north, crews are battling a blaze in the Wharton State Forest of New Jersey. The cause of the Jersey fire is under investigation. Meantime, Japan is facing wildfires of its own, with dozens of residents forced to evacuate and a number of homes damaged. Firefighters sprayed water onto the blazes to try and contain them. Experts blame dry weather and dried up fallen leaves in the forest as likely causes. Tributes are pouring in after the death of Mia Love, a former pro-life lawmaker from Utah who once spoke at the March for Life. The nation's first black Republican congresswoman passed away Sunday after a long battle with an aggressive form of brain cancer. She announced earlier this month that her cancer treatment was no longer working. However, she did surpass her previous prognosis of only having 10 to 15 months to live. She credited her faith for helping her to persevere as long as she did. Mia Love was 49 years old. Our pro-life efforts are getting a boost on Capitol Hill. Some Republican lawmakers are introducing new legislation to expand protections for some 2,700 pregnancy care centers across the U.S. Congressman Chris Smith, co-chair of the Congressional Pro-Life Caucus, says that these centers need to continue to provide vital services to expectant mothers and babies.
What they do is provide life-affirming love, compassion, empathy, any kind of tangible help that the woman needs, and whether it be diapers or whatever it might be for the child.
And we want to ensure that these mothers and their babies are supported. This bill helps to make sure that women have that opportunity. The Let Pregnancy Centers Serve Act will prohibit federal, state, and local governments from discriminating against pregnancy care centers because of their life-affirming mission.
But pro-abortion lawmakers accuse these crisis care centers of deliberately misleading pregnant women about their options.
Many of these CPCs are not healthcare providers, and they often operate specifically to deceive pregnant women with the goal of preventing them from having abortions.
Congressman Smith says all Democrats want to do is keep money coming into Planned Parenthood.
This has to go and get passed. We give protection against the coercive power of the state that's being wielded by these governors and by these legislatures and by some senators and House members like Elizabeth Warren, who just smear pregnancy care centers every day of the week.
Jamie Dangers from Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America says a vast majority of women support pregnancy care centers.
If they were engaging in deceptive practices or anything, they wouldn't have the 97% approval rating from the clients after the fact. You know, most women and girls don't want abortion to be their option.
Senator Warren and other Democrats are pushing legislation to allow the federal government to discipline and fine centers if they provide so-called misleading or false information about abortions, contraception, and other health matters. But that bill is unlikely to come up in a Republican-controlled Congress. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Mass and a Martyr. Why today is a milestone for the faithful in El Salvador. Memorial for the church in El Salvador. On this day in 1980, St. Oscar Romero was murdered while celebrating Mass. He was the Archbishop of the nation's capital city of San Salvador. His murder came during the start of a civil war between leftist guerrilla forces and the government's right-wing dictatorship. St. Oscar Romero was declared a martyr, killed in hatred of the faith for his vocal defense of human rights. He was canonized by Pope Francis in 2018. Well, finally tonight, spring is upon us, which may mean some springtime cleaning. Experts say the benefits of tidying up and decluttering during the spring can give your brain a boost. Spring can help people manage stress, elevate their mood, and provide a sense of accomplishment when they do some spring cleaning. Experts also add that the key is to try to not do too much at once, but set small goals to accomplish them one at a time. And I know somebody who needs to do a lot of spring cleaning. That's me. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.